Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello, Urncasters. I am Andy Zaltzman coming to you live from Melbourne, Australia on what should have been the morning after the fifth day of the Boxing Day test. But it is not that morning because the fifth day came as close to happening as Elvis Presley came to winning the World Snooker Championship. We were so far away from having a fifth day in this test match that even if they'd played the whole match again, ball by ball from the start, exactly the same, we'd have only got past lunch on day five because the over rate was crap. No prizes for guessing which team ended up on the losing side of that festival of batting ineptitude on a tricky pitch, it must be said. England 3-0 down. Felicity Ward joining me as always on the Urncast. If we'd started doing this series in the year 2002, this would be the fifth time in six series in Australia that I'd said, oh, we're 3-0 down after three.
Yeah. Andy, I don't even know what to say. I spoke to a friend who is also a comedian and who is an English cricket fan, and we've never had a harsh word, anything more than warmth, civility, even, you know, we've shared some stuff in our lives. And I would say he was almost rude to me this morning when we spoke, and I was trying to show sympathy for him and for the fans and for England. And he said, so you think we're cute, do you? And I was like, oh, this is going to go badly. This is, I'm not able to get out of this, am I? So I am a little bit wary to say anything. Right. I will say, I really feel for you. I think this is a very difficult series for you to be out there and away from your family at a time when I assume you need a few hugs.
It's been difficult. I've not even been able to hug my colleagues because we've all been sort of trying to keep away from each other because there's been COVID chaos through
really
the media
has.
Ranks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's all over.
Yeah.
Felicity, I've been in Australia now for almost 6 weeks and I've seen 5 days of cricket plus a session of something that may or may not have been cricket at the end, but on day three of the MTG test. And the Ashes is already over, which may be some kind of record, I think, for least cricket seen, other than my two colleagues who were quarantined in Adelaide, so saw the Ashes gone after seeing 3 days of live cricket out of a potential 25. So here we are. We're used to the Ashes being over at this stage. I mean, like I said, the fifth time in six that England have been 3-0 down after three. It's all over. It's all over by the, well, recrimination and quadrennial debate about the state of English cricket and the contractually obligated final two tests and the eternal bafflement that Scott Boland took 6 wickets for 7 runs in 4 overs. I mean, it was a great story at Felicity, but in his entire first-class career, I'd looked at the stats, he'd never even taken 3 wickets in his first 4 overs of an innings, let alone 6 in a test match. Does this make England 3 times rubbisher than the rubbishest state team that Scott Boland has played against? Please don't answer that question. Please don't.
Okay, good. I was just checking if that was rhetorical or not.
Yeah,
look, there is some downsides to Scott Boland getting so many wickets. And that's he doesn't have any hair left because every time he got a wicket, all the boys would come over and tussle his hair. And so he's just got a bald spot there now.
Nothing wrong with that.
They rubbed him a bald patch.
Yeah.
Pretty disrespectful.
Yeah, that's why my hair's like it is, because every time I tell a sensational...
So many wickets?
It's more a sensational joke. Rub myself on the head in congratulation. I mean, you've got a luxuriant head of hair, Felicity. Draw your own conclusions.
I haven't told a good joke in my life. I think this podcast would bear witness to that. Something very interesting came to light this week when I was trying to explain the rules of cricket loosely to my mother-in-law. And I said, yeah, England have lost the Ashes. And she said, oh, so do they come home now? And I said, no, they've still got two more tests to play. And she said, but they've lost. I went, yeah. And she said, so why do they play? And I went, that's a f***ing good question, Joe. Like, if you don't play five sets at Wimbledon if you've won by three. You know what I mean? It's a walk of shame. It's the vinegar strokes of sport.
A family show. I mean, it would certainly make boxing a much more interesting sport if they applied the same rules in that.
Well, if there's a knockout, you get out. You don't keep beating the shit out of a man that's unconscious.
I guess it goes back to the early tours where, you know, you played matches to earn money from people coming to watch. And if you're getting a boat to Australia, you're not going to come home just because you've been shit in the first three games. And also, you know, England's had numerous great victories in dead Ashes series. I mean, it was for 15 years, really, through the 90s and the early 2000s, all we could cling to. As England, in fact, they've slightly dried up in Australia of late. I mean, if England can get a win in the next two matches, A, it will be a f***ing miracle, and B, it will be England's first win in three series in Australia. And I think only their seventh in the last 32 years in Australia. So, I mean, there is, you know, that would be something, not necessarily to build on, but to clear the foundations for a brighter future.
England have got to do something. They've got to do something. They've got to do something for the fans. That's who I feel sorry for. I don't know if you saw this. The Barmy Army have even put out a statement about the state of English cricket.
Really?
They've put out a statement, not a song, not a video clip of a drunk, sunburnt man with a trumpet. They have put out a political statement on where they stand in the entire cricketing structure.
And presumably this comes from the top brass in the Barmy Army, field marshals. To be honest, I think I might suggest to the Barmy Army that they should look at themselves. I believe their repertoire of songs has diminished over the years, and I think this may be affecting the team. There's far too much reliance on Don't Take Me Home and the basic We Are the Army, the Barmy Army song. I think they've lost... They've lost a lot of variety as much as England have in their bowling attack.
Well, that's what happens. They feed off each other. It's a live show, like any live show. So this is, I mean, this is the full statement. There are no jokes here. I brought this up. We in the Barmy Army are loyal and passionate Test cricket fans. We support the team through good times and bad, but we are gutted and distraught that we've lost the Ashes so soon. However, as all the England fans in Australia have shown from Brisbane to Melbourne, we will never waver in our loyal support for the team. Here's where it gets saucy. It's clear there are fundamental and structural issues with the county game, and its level of prioritisation is not working for the Test team. The lack of attention given to men's red ball cricket is clearly evident in the disappointing performances of the Test team. We were shown a stark reminder of the vulnerability of the format we know and love when the fifth India test was cancelled on the day of the game. What can we do as fans? We can make our voice heard. Rather than being disgruntled on social media, we want to be proactive and represent our members. As such, we'll be listening to and consolidating members' opinions and contacting the ECB with our thoughts. We will be partnering with Cricket Supporters Association to combine our feedback to share with the ECB. Then it says, no matter what, we remain unconditionally supportive of the England team. We've been amazed by people staying up over the world, hoping for that next wicket, next boundary and getting behind the team. We'll certainly be right behind the lads for the next test. Come on, England.
Well, I mean, those are strong words from the army. Mm. And I've also heard rumours they are mobilising the territorial Barmy Army as well for reinforcements for the final two tests. So the reservists could be called up. That's how desperate it's got. There's been a huge amount of examination of the state of English cricket. And, I mean, I'm going to throw this your way, Felicity. Yes, this has been bad.
Okay. I look forward to not being able to answer this.
I'm going to bring this up from my stat whack later on in the show. England, a mere... Yes, 18 runs per wicket worse than Australia in this series. Now, admittedly, Australia's batting hasn't been, you know, as spectacular as it has in previous series, and England have only averaged about 18 runs per wicket. But in terms of the runs per wicket gap, this is actually the least shit of England's 5-3-0 defeats in terms of performance in the first three tests to lose the Ashes. I mean, I'm really making that stat work in the only way that it can possibly make that point. But, you know, if you do, you know, Australia minus England, then you can kid yourself that we're getting better, even though patently we're getting a lot worse. So let me cling to that.
Well, the good news is I am terrible at fractions. So what you can just tell me whatever happened and I will believe you.
That is the joy of stats, Felicity.
That is the joy of stats.
As I've said
before. I don't need to know.
If you shove your hand far enough up, then you can make them say whatever you want. But in terms of the...
You're a poet, Andrew.
In terms of the analysis and the post-mortems, I mean, the Ashes began with a post-mortem. In 1882, a satirical magazine printed a mock obituary of English cricket and said the body would be cremated and the ashes taken to Australia. And then the following winter, it's there. It snows in the winter. I mean, I'm here in Australia and people claim it's summer just because it's hot. I don't believe it. It's winter. Winter goes through the winter months. Anyway, the following winter, 1882-83, the Ashes were created physically and they've sort of existed ever since. I think with this series, rather than printing a mock obituary, they'll just lob it over the garden fence and forget about it. Very much like the people whose house backed onto ours did with a dead fox a few short years ago. Just lobbed it over the fence and made it someone else's problem.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Did you see them? You saw them just lob it over.
No, we filled in the blanks on this one. There was a dead fox lying right by our fence in a way that you wouldn't expect a fox to just die. And so
slumped with one arm, looking kind of casual. Like he was relaxing rather than dead.
Anyway, I think the reason that...
Weekend at Bernie's with a fox.
We discovered the reason why the fox may have been lobbed over the fence when we called the council to say, we've got a dead fox in the garden, can you come and pick it up? And they said, yeah, that'll be £70. So anyway, I digress. The point is, I feel a similar level of disappointment as I did that morning, finding the dead fox on my lawn as, you know, watching England's batting. It was a dead fox in the garden of a batting performance. I mean, as contests go, this is the disappointing thing. We sort of talked about it in last week after the 2-0 game. This series has been about as gripping and unpredictable as Badger versus articulated lorry on a motorway. It's been, you know, one-sided. And I mean, sure, Badger is always better at home in the woods, but away on the motorway, it just doesn't have the technique to cope or the firepower.
No, and it's not agile enough to dodge an entire truck, basically. I'm pretty happy with the woodland creature analogies and feel free to use as many more as you like.
Okay, thank you. It's good to have that clearance.
That support.
The test, as most tests seem to be these days, was overshadowed by more COVID issues. There were positive tests in the wider England setup and the players were late to the ground on day two, having had to do test. And then after the game, Chris Silverwood, the England head coach, is having to isolate as a close contact. Now, is it possible, Felicity, for Chris Silverwood to have had a worse tour as England head coach? That everything's gone wrong. They've gone 3-0 down. His decision-making, his selection, he's the chief selector as well in this bizarre mixed role. They've gone 3-0 down. His decisions have been panned across the board. And now he has to sit out the next test due to COVID contact, meaning that England will almost certainly play brilliantly and win.
Yeah, 100%. I expect them to win, the next test, absolutely. Chris Silverwood has been asked to isolate. Fortunately, he hasn't been anywhere near the team since November. And you can expect more of those throughout the episode. I mean, Chris Silverwood, the Academy Award for looking like he once gave a shit. I'm sure you saw the post-game interview, and it was like he just won like £1,000 at the poker machines and made it to the G just before the game had finished. Like Leach had sent him a text saying, are you nearby? I think it's going to finish soon. And he bolted over from Melbourne Casino and then just ran into a journalist. Like he didn't actually know what had happened with the game. He's just like, yeah, boys, 110%, game of two halves, a lot of positives. You did take one of the positives. It was COVID. That was the test. It was COVID.
Yes, I think from speaking to people in cricket, he's very respected as a coach, and but he's clearly struggled as England supremo. And I mean, it's hard to know what can a head coach say in that situation. He can't really come out and say, "F***ing hell, we have been so shit." And I've been shit. He can't really do that. I mean, it'd be interesting if someone did in any sport.
Joe Root did.
Pat Rafter did it, the Australian tennis player. I remember him after a Wimbledon final. He didn't quite say it in those terms, but he said, "Yeah, I guess I choked." And it was such a disarming moment of honesty.
Welcome to Australia, mate. Isn't that what we're known for? Disarming honesty. We're like, "Oh, I didn't know you were going to tell me how you really felt. I thought you were just going to lie and then gossip behind my back later."
In terms of his selections, Felicity, England made four changes for this test match. Now, it's the first time that they've made four changes within a series in Australia from one match to the next since 1974-5, when they did it twice and they were getting absolutely hammered by Geoff Thompson and Dennis Lilly at their fearsome peak. It's the 10th time in 21 tests that England have made four changes. 10 times in 21 tests. They'd done so 10 times in the previous 236 tests over almost 19 years. Now, some of this is due to COVID and this sort of elective rotation in the squad that they started doing. When, having won the first three games of the year, they then started sending people home from India, and the whole thing went since when they've lost 9 and won 1 and drawn 2, largely thanks to rain. The question I have for you, Felicity, and I've got the answer here on a piece of card. Are England struggling because they keep changing the team, or are they changing the team because they are struggling?
Oh, this is a chicken and egg situation, isn't it, Andy?
I'm going to have to push you for an answer.
I'm going to say kindness is important, and so I think that they're struggling because they keep changing the team. And if they just had the same team, they'd probably beat us 5-0. Did that sound convincing?
No, it didn't. And you're wrong. It's both. The answer is both. Yes, they're struggling because they keep changing the team, and they're changing the team because they're struggling. It's a chicken and egg situation in which the chicken and egg are wrestling in some kind of weird feathery omelette situation. Fundamentally, it's not going very well.
Oh, I've just got a breaking Chris Silverwood joke. Chris Silverwood is a close contact for someone who's tested positive for COVID. It's the closest he's been to a test since last summer.
Zing.
Thank you so much.
I gave you a question. I understand you have a quiz question for me, Felicity.
Yes, I do. Now, this is a bit of a simple, straightforward one. But I thought, for the listeners, if you didn't just watch the test at the G, here is a little quiz question for you. 149, 297, 192, 185, 68. Is this Labuschagne's next Ashes scorecard, or is it the current England team's innings so far?
Oh, that was cruel. 68.
That was really cruel, wasn't it?
I've been deliberately trying not to think of the number 68 for the last 3 days, Felicity.
Sorry.
England all out for 68.
I've been trying not to think of 69.
It's a family show.
It's not.
68 all out. I mean, it's only England's second worst score against Australia in the last two series. The last six games since Headingley, they've bowled out for 67 and went on to win in a game that I'm sure Nathan Lyon hasn't thought of every single minute of every single day after dropping that ball with just a couple of runs needed to win, even if he subsequently won the Ashes back. It's their third lowest against Australia since 1904 and their lowest in Australia since 1904. It's also their shortest innings against Australia by one ball ahead of that Leeds debacle in 2019. 117 years of Ashes cricket, the shittest innings England have had since then. It's basically equal. One run more, one ball less than Headingley. But Headingley, they went on to win, whereas here they ended up losing 6 wickets in 4 overs to Scott Boland. So this is the shittest innings England have had against Australia since... In 1904, they made 101. It's the worst innings against Australia since 1902. 120 years. The 1st of January 1902. 61 all out in 15 overs.
I mean, the only time they played worse cricket was before women had the vote. So maybe it's time to rescind the vote Maybe that's what's keeping you you back.
I mean, it's an interesting and surprisingly anti-feminist angle you've taken there, Felicity. I wasn't really expecting
that. Well, I'm here. I'm not like other girls. I've just, most of my friends are men and, you know, I just don't really get along with girls. So
you want to strip them of the vote? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just always, you know, whinging. Why don't they just like get on with it? You know, guys are just easier to get along with. For anyone who doesn't know me or doesn't understand the tone of irony or sarcasm, that is so far away from what I believe and who I am. I just need you to know that. Because I don't want to get angry tweets or come-ons from guys going, oh, I heard you're not like all the other girls. I like those girls. Andy, we've got another sponsorship ad this week. It's very cricket-related, don't worry. And it's actually something very helpful. So here it is. Let's just have a little listen and see if it's a product for you. Do you ever listen to the cricket and think, who's that commentating? No? Well, this ad isn't for you. Hi, I'm Felicity Ward, and when I'm not trying to stay awake for a near obsolete cricket format, I'm trying to figure out which damn ex-player I'm listening to talk about said cricket format. We've all heard of Shazam, the app that tells you what song you're listening to. Well, now it's time to download the app that tells you who's yelling, how's that? It's called Who's That? And for just 11 Australian dollars, or 49p, you can have the world of cricket sounds in your podcast. Gilly, Hussy, sometimes they sound the same. Get Who's That? Not being racist, they just get excited at the same pitch. Which Chapel brother is this? And why is there more than one? By Who's That? Is it Aggers? Is it Athers? Why do their names sound the same, but their voices not at all? Wonders will never cease until you buy Who's That?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's try and find some negatives for Australia. Steve Smith's form, Felicity. In the previous two Ashes series, he averaged over 100. He averaged over 110, which even Bradman didn't do in back-to-back Ashes, well, in two Ashes series in his career. But he's looked really sort of out of sorts and out of rhythm in his batting. What do you think? I mean, is it insufficient cricket? Is it insufficient youth? Is he just getting older? Are his eyes... Is he just having a bit of a rut? Or... Is it? Did he
his
make
eyes.
Some? Did he make some sort of Faustian pact with the devil to bat incredibly in 2019, and we're now seeing that he's only being okay?
What's his average now, Andy?
In this series, well, I mean, it's probably better than pretty much every other England player apart from Joe Root, I would imagine. But 30 odd. He had a scratchy 93 in Adelaide.
Yeah, I mean, a scratchy 93 is still a 93. Let's be real about that.
Yes. I mean, yes, it's higher than any scoring that are made in this series. Yes.
Yeah. I think that Steve Smith is allowed to have a couple of tests that he's not the best player. I think that's absolutely fine. That he's not the best player in the world. Sorry, let me correct myself.
Okay.
He still added runs on the board. I think having a three test, well, you know, that's not even a three test slump if 93 is in there. He's allowed to be off his game. Right. That's what I think. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, but you did bring this up the last episode too.
Oh, did
so
I?
It does
oh,
feel, sorry. just briefly, I think you're trying to plant a seed of doubt so that I do start to question yes. the confidence of the Australian
That's how
team.
It works, isn't it? I say it to you as an Australian and it naturally osmoses into the souls of all other Australians and thereby into the mind of Steve Smith. And he will never be the same again. And I will have played my part in England regaining the Ashes.
It's true. Do you know what that's called?
Yeah.
It's called osmosis, but it's spelled A-U-S-M-O-S-I-S. And that's a grade A pun there for yes. your listeners and for Andy Zaltzman.
And in many ways in 2019, he was the osmosis in which he led his team, although he wasn't captain anymore, through the
lovely.
Through to retaining the Ashes.
He did split the team in two, though, and walk through them. So.
Good point.
I mean, we've got to take this shit on tour. Chris Silverwood has had to isolate for 10 days, but for safety, he's just going to stay in his hotel till 2023.
One final question from Melbourne, and I want you to be as honest as you like. Have you ever seen a tireder-looking cricketer than Ollie Robinson, the England seamer? He's done reasonably well in this series without ruining Australia, but the first balls of his spells, he reminds me of... Well, we used to have a guy in our village team who was about 75... And had clearly been a good bowler about 40 years previously. And his first ball, it was you could almost hear ratchets and cogs going in his body as his arm kind of creaked over and the ball kind of trickled down the pitch. And Ollie Robinson, who's 27, I think this is quite a valuable thing as a bowler. Because if you're a batsman and you see some guy lumbering in and dobbing it down at 70 miles an hour, who you know can bowl a lot faster than that, it lulls you into a sense of false security, and then wickets become a net. I think it's quite a crafty strategy.
Mm. Do you think Ollie Robinson's just running up to the crease going, I just want to watch Tipping Point? I take your Ollie Robinson and I raise you a Joe Root.
Right.
Yes, Joe Root has always had the somewhat demeanour of a Dickensian orphan, but he now has the appearance to match. He looks hungry. That man looks thin and tired. I watched an interview with Nasser Hussain and he made a great point that when Michael Vaughan started captaining the one-day team, he had an energy that Hussain knew he couldn't match, and that's when he knew his time as captain was over. Does Root have the energy to lead this team into two more tests against Australia? Because at the moment, he doesn't look like he has the energy to rub off a scratch card.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, he's had a lot to cope with as England captain, captaining a team that's crumbling. During COVID, a hectic schedule. They've played four series in a row against the top three teams. I mean, usually you get in that schedule, there's some respite, but they've faced the three top bowling attacks in the world. All the batters apart from him have failed massively. And they've all got a lot. Here's an interesting stat. I think there's 14 players who played for England last year and this year, 2020 and 2021. Only Root has averaged more this year than last year. And that includes not just all the specialist batsmen, but all the wicketkeepers, all-rounders and bowlers. Every single one has got worse at batting this year,
Jesus
apart from
Christ.
Root, who's had one of the best years a test batsman's ever had. So you can understand him just being knackered. And you know, it's his second time in Australia getting thrashed. You know, generally, England captains last a maximum of about 4 to 4.5 years. He's had that now.
Mm.
And, yeah, I mean, I think if there was an obvious candidate, I think he'd probably step down at the end of the series. He's also young enough that he could do it again in 3 or 4 years' time. And there's no reason. We tend to think when a captain stops, that's it. He'd never do it again. Whereas, you know, he might come back better having learned from this, you know, what's been an interesting up and down 5 years. Is, you know, his win rates are similar to Alistair Cook before him.
Mm.
So I'd be surprised if he carries on after this.
I would like to see him enjoy the game again because he does not look like he's enjoying the game. He looks tired and disappointed most of the time that he's out. Even when he hits a six, he's like, oh, I'm just going to have to keep hitting more of those, aren't I?
The look on his face as well, particularly when you see him walk out to bat, there's an unmistakable look on his face which says, oh shit, I'm coming in at f*** for two again. England's average score at the fall of the second wicket in 2021 has been, I think, 36.2. after the Melbourne test. And so when you're captaining and then you have to go out to bat straight away with your team in trouble, it's been It's been absolutely brutal for him.
I don't think the team's actually recovered from heat stroke in Adelaide. I think the ones that don't have COVID have heat stroke. Wasn't it 37 degrees one day that they were playing?
It was one. I can't quite remember. It's all a bit of a blur. It all got quite chaotic. And there was one day when it was really hot. We don't really feel it so much in the commentary boxes because they tend to be air conditioned. But there was one day just walking to the ground and you just sort of arrive drenched and exhausted. And you think, how do people play professional sports in this? I always think that watching the Australian Open when it gets. I mean, you see players just literally boiling and becoming casseroles during the course of a game.
Well, that's what I think about this England team. They need to be training in a kiln. They don't have access to these kind of conditions. They don't come out and play the Sheffield Shield for Australia.
Well.
Or do they?
No, but should they? Now, I'm going to throw this at you, Felicity. There's been a lot of talk on the inadequacies of county cricket. I think there needs to be a global scheme where countries send their A team or their youth team or just some kind of selection team to play in the first class competition of other countries. So you'd get, say, a Pakistan A coming to play a season in the county championship, England A playing a season in the Sheffield Shield, and a global scheme around the world. I think it would benefit. It would be quite expensive. A lot of the players obviously have the T20 behemoth gnawing away at cricket from the inside might make it logistically awkward. But I think it's something that ought to be feasible and would benefit all cricket nations. Discuss!
A little student exchange program. I love it. I mean, it worked for, a lot of people in my Japanese class. I couldn't afford to go to Japan, but, it seemed to work for them and bully for them.
Yes. I went on a French exchange and I came back with a newfound respect for cheese and ham toasties, which was all they seemed to eat in the house I was in.
Well, that sounds très f***ing beyond. You have to excuse me. I speak a little German. I love it, Andy. I absolutely love it. Because what you get with any kind of cultural exchange program is you get to see the rest of the world and you get to understand how other people live and how other people play cricket. And something that's come up time and time again, almost every time I talk about cricket, definitely on this podcast before or in the previous incarnation, is cricket in India, cricket in Australia is something that people play on a daily basis, that people play it in their backyards, in their driveways, girls play it at school. It's a working class game. And I say working class actually to mean everyone kind of has a crack at it. Whereas over here, it's not, people play football, you take a football to a picnic or whatever, but unless you've got full whites and pads and kit, it doesn't seem like something you just like whip out at the park. That sounded rude.
That's certainly true now. I mean, I think it didn't used to be the case. I mean, English cricket has always been riven by class to the extent where up until relatively recently, professional players and amateur players in the same team would use different dressing rooms and in some grounds would use different gates to get onto the pitch. It was really weird. England didn't... it was viewed for a long time that a professional could not captain England at cricket. I think that only changed after the Second World War. But it used to be the case that cricket was much more of a universal sport in England. And even when I was a kid, there were some privately educated players in the England team, but the vast majority weren't. Whereas now, the vast majority have come through private schools. Now, this is not to say they shouldn't pick private school players, but it highlights the fact that there must be a large amount of talent that used to be going into cricket that is no longer going into that for various reasons relating to the changes in society, the lack of visibility of cricket as a sport since it went off free to air, the flogging off of school playing fields is one of the greatest acts of social vandalism perpetrated over decades by various governments. So the upshot is, as you say, it is much less of a universal game in England than it used to be. I'm not sure it was ever as universal as it is in Australia and India, as you were saying, and Pakistan and other places. Mm. But I think one of the reasons behind England's struggles is the lack of depth. In some ways they're getting, the facilities at private schools now are such that they're almost getting ready-made professional players. But, the talent pool, I think, must be shallower.
I mean, it's so stupid because what you need to do is harness young, angry, working-class men's fury. And what better way to do that than to get them to hit something with a bat or throw a ball at someone?
Now, yes. So, I think you're absolutely onto something here, Felicity. I would go further than that even and say that cricket is the only thing that should be taught in state schools. Because it's obviously, A, the greatest thing that ever existed. B, it teaches you about life. It's a metaphor for the human condition. As you say, it's an outlet. And, cricket and drama. That's the only things I want taught at my kids' school.
It teaches you patience. It teaches you dexterity. It teaches you about teamwork. Yeah. It teaches you how to tell someone to f*** off without the microphones hearing you.
These are all valuable life skills. And
valuable life lessons.
It teaches, from my memory of cricket at school, it teaches you about fear and failure as well. And these are important things to get baked into your existence. So I want cricket and drama because that's the skills my kids need, the ability to pretend that they are living happy and fulfilled lives, have jobs that they want to do and own their own homes, which, you know, I think for their generation is going to be absolutely crucial. Well, it's good that in this cricket podcast we've sorted out the education problems for the United Kingdom. Thank you.
Well, Barmy Army, if you are listening, we've just solved the problem. So if you could take that to the ECB, that'd be lovely. I also love the idea of the entire Barmy Army not being allowed in to speak to the board of the ECB. So they all just stand outside and sing. They sing their suggestions. Oi, oi! One of the things that we would like to see is more focus on the working class county cricket. But hi, 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 hi.
It could work. On the subject of songs, we have a song, Felicity. Especially commissioned.
Can you believe it?
For the Urncast.
We have a lovely friend, Geraldine Quinn, longtime friend, longtime cricket lover, longtime musical comedian. And something, I don't think we've had a song on the show before, have we?
Well, I mean, you did one minute ago. Does that not count?
I mean, someone who has talent.
Right.
But this is the first song that we've had commissioned and written for the show, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's very exciting stuff. And Geraldine, like you, is in Melbourne, so let's have a listen to Geraldine Quinn's ode to the MCG test.
Hey there, Melbourne, you've been through it, girl, and during the very longest lockdown in the world, at least we got the third test, started Boxing Day, the English team had play. By Monday afternoon they were giving us a fight. I went to bed that evening a little too late at night, and then I missed it. I slept in and I missed it. I tuned in late and we're 68. The Brits were in the shit. Oh golly gosh, I missed it. 80 minutes and I missed it. I guess we still have 2023. You have to concede that it was poetry when debutant Scott Boland was the one who held the key. Six off seven, kind of heaven. Look, you have to laugh. I wish I hadn't slipped in for an hour. Cheer up, Joseph, you've reached a new frontier. You match the global record of ducks within a year. Oh, but I missed it. Crack, pardon me, I missed it. Don't get mad, I do feel bad. It was so goddamn quick. I mean, bloody hell, I missed it. Too tired, I missed it. I guess we still have 2023. I truly wish you the best at the SCG.
Yes, Geraldine Quinn sleeping in and missing the game. And we all know from last episode how painful it is to miss the cricket.
Yes.
Could I also just say, if anyone does want to find out more about Geraldine Quinn, her website is Geraldine Quinn, and that is with two N's, .com.
Bugle Urncast Q&A section. Well, we've opened this up to the public this week, Felicity. We've asked for questions on Twitter. Thank you to everyone who sent in a question.
A deluge.
It was a veritable deluge. Some, just a bit harsh. Niharika Prasad, I'm looking at you. should England lose its test match status?
I mean, in the previous series of this podcast, that would be called an undoubted sick burn, Nereka. Absolutely brutal.
I mean, in terms of teams losing their test status, it was often said about Bangladesh in the early years of their test existence when they lost pretty much every game, that they should lose their test status. They are the only team that's had a worse collective batting average in a year of test cricket this millennium than England in 2021. They had about three or four years in the 2000s when they were worse than England. And that's even factoring Joe Root into the equation.
That's right. I don't have any more jokey ways to apologise or show compassion to you. It is so relentless.
I'm immune. A lifetime of pain. Ugh. At Wambling Future asks, can England outsource their Ashes campaign to India, who seem to have a better chance of winning in Australia? And India have won their last two series in Australia. It's a global marketplace. This makes perfect sense to me. If, you know, we pay India to play the Ashes for us.
I mean, that does have echoes of colonisation. I'm not...
Yes.
It feels like a very English sentiment to go, could we just outsource this to India? It's like,
it's the British way, Felicity.
It is the British way. Is there another country that we could pay to do our dirty work? Hopefully someone that isn't, you know, the same colour as us.
I think this is the acceptable side of colonialism. It's acknowledging that other countries are better than us at things that we used to be good at and allowing them to do it for us. I think that's perfectly fair.
Sure. I loved the next one, the Shah of Blah. The question was, should the UK rejoin the EU and import South African batters via coal pack laws in order to improve their batting? Now, this is the problem when you ask Bugle followers for questions. They end up outsmarting you with recondite and obscure legal references. I cannot participate in this question.
Well, the coal pack laws, it was a... Ped will, I'm sure, back me up or correct me on this. It was a... Kolpak was a Slovenian handball player, and it was a court case about where he was allowed to play sport in the EU. And an upshot of this by a circuitous route was that South Africans could play county cricket, not as overseas players. And England also sort of helped the talent drain from South Africa boosted England's ranks for several years. But since we left the EU, this pathway is no longer open, and we've missed out on numerous potentially outstanding cricketers that really should be the backbone of England. And all the more galling is that Marnus Labuschagne, born in South Africa, moved to Australia as a child, but can't help feeling he slipped through the net.
Oh, absolutely.
Ped has corrected me. Slovakian, not Slovenian, apparently. Thank you. Devon Conway of New Zealand scored a double 100 against England, played in South Africa to his mid-20s. I mean, he definitely should be playing for England. I mean, even, you know, the likes of Kagiso Rabada, currently in the South African team. Basically, you know, we could have had... England have lacked fast bowlers. You've got Rabada and Ngidi doing very well in the test match against India. They've got Henrik Norkia bowls over 90 miles an hour. These should be the backbone of England's fast bowling attack in the Ashes.
Yep.
Thanks, Brexit. You've ruined everything.
Yep. You'll never have another KP again.
Marco, who goes by the tag at Ozloafer, have England considered naming extras as their next captain, sundries, as they're known in Australia, seeing as they are England's most consistent performer after Joe Root? Well, I mean, this was... we've been tracking the Root stats through the year. He's ended up with 1,708 runs, the most third most by a player in a calendar year, 3.2 times as many as England's next top scorer, a record by an embarrassing margin, 1,178 runs more than Rory Burns, also a massive record. Extras was third after Rory Burns as top scorer. But I'm going to pick you up on this, Marco, because actually extras haven't had that good a year. Out of all the years in which England have played at least 15 tests, this is the year that they've had the fewest extras. So even extras have been
and
off form
improving
for England this year. So I'm not having it.
I was actually going to, before I read these, I was going to make a joke saying that at the SCG test, the openers now are Rory Burns and extras.
We could just retire the number two batting position. Like you get, you know, football teams retiring
shirts.
And
we don't have openers anymore. We have an opener.
Yeah, India nearly retired the number four position when Tendulkar retired. Just go straight from 3 to 5, just lose an automatic wicket.
That's out of respect, though, not out of desperation.
Daniel Norcross, who was a guest on our review of the Brisbane, the first of the three debacles that we've had so far, sent us this question. In the one parallel universe, and it will be only one, where this England team beat this Australian team, how do they do it? Well, Daniel, long-time fan of the show, but you can also listen to Daniel's own cricket podcast with Stephen Finn and Toby Tarrant. There are, as you well know, 287 parallel cricket universes. The idyllic, perfect one in which England won this Ashes series had a rusty, out-of-practice Australian team in turmoil after the sudden resignation of their captain for a frankly embarrassing reason, still uncertain after losing a home series to an injury-ravaged India. B, an uncharacteristically cool Australian summer, leading to a couple of pitches that suit English bowlers. C, an England team battle-hardened after a year of tough test cricket, enlivened by the return of their talismanic all-rounder. D, Australia losing its best bowler for the second test and its second-best bowler for the second and third test. E, England winning the crucial first toss of the series in conditions tailor-made for their bowling attack. F, Steve Smith out of form, relatively, and ageing David Warner battling to keep the flame alive. Harris and Head haunted by their failures in England in 2019. And crucially, G, they would have had, in this parallel universe, at least one decent practice match. They'd have had Jofra Archer fit, Harold Larwood back from the dead, and Len Hutton brought back to life as well and given the elixir of eternal youth. Ian Botham popping out of a TARDIS in his late 1970s pomp saying, what year is it? Ollie Pope having become the Ollie Pope he should have become, rather than this curious shadow version of Ollie Pope that he actually has become. Jasprit Bumrah granted instant English citizenship. Manus Labuschagne repatriated to South Africa. And Pat Cummins arrested and put on trial in The Hague for crimes against humanity for his role in the 13th century crusade. Then I think it would be 1-1 after 3. It would have been a draw in Adelaide. So, I mean, it was just that crucial seventh factor that didn't fall into place.
It's always the seventh, isn't it?
Just a couple of quick ones. Filth D says, did you have a little bet on for the Ducks record? Were you worried at how close to the wire that got? Well, this is another thing we've been... I've certainly been tracking on TMS since the early months of the year. The most Ducks in a year, 54... England equaled it with the final duck of their second innings. Ollie Robinson's duck equaled the record most ducks by a team in a year. But this England team had one fewer match than the 1998 England team, so they win it on a tiebreaker.
Yes!
Also, they had way more ducks in the top order, so those ducks were more punishing, more damaging to England. So, yes, it's been the duckiest test year in history. They really stepped up to the plate because it looked only one duck in the first inning.
That's what they do.
Four in the second
innings. Australia said to them at the beginning of the year, go duck yourself, and they did.
Thank you for your contributions to that. I hope we've answered every possible question about this series so far. Well, that brings us almost to the end of this episode of the Bugle Ashes Urn Cast. And the urn has indeed been cast out of the window yet again. And smashed on the ground in a pool of despair. I've been holding this, trying to avoid this for as long as possible, but I can no longer avoid it.
Stand back! It's a stat whack!
You know, Andy, I've heard you do that, I'm going to say 30 times, and it never stops being funny to me. Never!
A lot of stats emerge from this game. We've already mentioned some of them. I'll just run through some of the others, and if you just hear whimpering and quiet crying in the background, please be patient. Some of these stats are going to be quite harrowing. So, Ped, I think we need a bit of music to make them a little more palatable. This was the quickest Ashes loss in Australia, 852.3 overs in the three tests combined. In terms of total overs played before going 3-0 down, no touring team in Ashes history has ever lost that quickly. England have lost a couple of series at home that quickly. To put this in context, Felicity, in 1924-25, England went 3-0 down after three, but they dragged it out for 1,377 overs, and they were eight ball overs, so the equivalent of 1,830, more than twice as much cricket before the dead fist of total failure ground itself into the face of naive English hope. England have lost the series, having scored only 1,125 runs in three tests. That's the third fewest scored in the Ashes to go 3-0 down after the 50-51 England team. There was a badly rain-affected game involved in that set, some very low scores. And Australia in 1886, before bats were legalised, I think, Australia won by an innings after scoring 267. That is the second lowest score in Ashes history to win by an innings. After 172, England scored at Old Trafford before winning by an innings against Australia in 1888. It's the joint eighth lowest ever score to win by an innings and the lowest against England, the lowest by anyone in 35 years. Australia's first innings lead of 82 runs was the third lowest ever to win a test match by an innings. I mean, do I have to go on? England still only have two batsmen with 50s after three tests. That's only the fifth time in the history of test cricket that after three tests of a series, a team's had only two players reach 50. It's only the second time it's happened in the Ashes. The 68 all-out was the fourth time that England had been out in under 30 overs in the last 4 years. It happened in Auckland against New Zealand, against Ireland at Lords on the first morning, against Australia at Leeds in that 67 all-out we talked about, and then at the MCG this time. England had been bowled out in under 30 overs four times in the previous 114 years, and now it's happened four times in 4 years. It didn't happen at all from 1905 to 1980. It was the 13th time they've been out for under 200 this year, the joint second most by a team in a year, the 8th time they've been out for under 150, the joint most ever. But on the plus side, Marnus Labuschagne failed. Out for one, Felicity. In his previous 14 tests in the first innings, he'd made at least 40, which was an all-time record. The previous and most consecutive first innings 40s was 11. So at least we've broken the Labuschagne spell. Here endeth the stats. Amen. Well, Felicity, that concludes this week's Urncast. I mean, it's been a disappointing series on the cricket field. Of course, the Urncast has been topping the cricket podcast charts in Chile and Finland. So, yeah, we've got that to cling to. We'll be back to analyse England's glorious dead rubber victory in the Sydney Test match. I mean, how badly do you think Australia are going to be thrashed in Sydney?
Oh, pretty badly. I think it's going to be a humiliation. It might undo, actually, all their good work from the first three tests.
Right. Yeah.
I'm doing my best here, Andy. I'm doing my best here, man.
To be honest, I think if anything other than 5-0 now, even if it's a rain-affected draw, most England fans
will take
in a heartbeat.
Oh, gagging for a 4-0 draw. Absolutely begging for one. That would be a victory. That would, if that happens, you will see drunk Englishmen on the plane home. Cheering, disrupting the passengers. They're going to have a brilliant time on a draw. And you'll get a new Barmy Army song out of it. Coincidentally, this is the only time that England have tried to avoid whitewashing in their entire history.
Well, you know, a draw would be something, yeah, from small acorns, generally pigs have dinner. But, you know, a tree may grow from the shit that the pig subsequently does. Let's cling to that. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week to analyse England's glorious thrashing of Australia in the SCG test that now seems inevitable. From me, Andy Zaltzman, here in a frankly delusional Melbourne, goodbye.
And Felicity Ward in a very cold London apartment. Farewell.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, The Last Post, Tiny Revolutions and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.